Today is Thursday, May 30th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, after Special Counsel Robert Mueller made his statement on the Russia investigation yesterday, what's next for the U.S. Congress?
So he has given us an array of facts, which we will take to the Congress and to the courts.
U.S. Acting Secretary of Defense Pat Shanahan says China remains his biggest concern for Washington, and a look at a new Muslim American sitcom. Those stories and more are all ahead on today's International Edition. Special Counsel Robert Mueller's refusal on Wednesday to clear U.S. President Donald Trump of allegations that he obstructed justice by trying to thwart the Russia investigation appeared to embolden opposition Democrats and calls for more investigations of Trump and possibly his impeachment. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says Congress will take the facts provided by the special counsel's report and continue with its own investigations, saying nothing is off the table.
He also was clear in saying that if he thought the president could be cleared, he would have cleared him, but he didn't. And that is very clear. So he has given us an array of facts, which we will take to the Congress and to the courts as we go forward, as we investigate and litigate.
But President Trump doesn't think Democrats will travel down the impeachment road.
I don't think so, because there was no crime. You know, it's high crimes. And not with or, it's high crimes and misdemeanors. There was no high crime and there was no misdemeanor. So how do you impeach based on that?
Now for more on what's next for Congress, I spoke with VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman.
The reaction is predictably but not entirely partisan. For instance, one of President Trump's main allies on Capitol Hill, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, said the case is over and that Robert Mueller is moving on into private life and it's time for Congress to do the same. So he was not moved by anything that Robert Mueller said. On the other hand, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Jerry Nadler, says it now falls on Congress to respond to the crimes, lies, and other wrongdoings of President Trump. Adam Schiff, chairman of House Intelligence Committee, said that Robert Mueller has one more service to provide, testimony before Congress and the American people. I do want to point out one interesting exception to this partisan trend.
Okay.
There is a Republican congressman from Michigan, Justin Amash, and he has been saying for some time now that there is something to be investigated and potentially to impeach when it comes to President Trump. Yesterday, he tweeted after Mueller's statement that the ball is in our court, in Congress's court, meaning it is up to Congress to further pursue this matter.
As you mentioned, Democrats are speaking up and saying that perhaps it is time to pursue impeachment proceedings, not so much draw up articles of impeachment. Republicans are saying, no, case closed. Is there any indication that that process is gaining momentum to a palpable pace that things are going to move forward at this stage?
Let me tell you that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has a headache right now. She has been saying, let's not move to impeachment yet. Let's continue to investigate, maybe impeachment somewhere down the line. As the House Speaker, she does not want to get ahead of the American public on this. We have to remember that Bill Clinton was impeached and his approval numbers actually rose after the impeachment, and House Republicans were punished for what they did in terms of impeachment. Nancy Pelosi does not want that to happen to Democrats this time around. If there is a call for impeachment, she wants the House Democrats to move in lockstep with American public opinion. And right now, the American public is not clamoring for President Trump's impeachment. So there is this scene that you see of Pelosi trying to keep her members in line. That job just got a lot more difficult because the calls for impeachment are becoming much louder among all Democrats on Capitol Hill right now.
And then you have the extra headache of, yes, the Democrats control the House where the impeachment articles are drawn up, but the Senate is where the trial takes place, and that's still Republican-held, at least until 2020.
Let's remember here that impeachment does not mean removal from office. Bill Clinton was impeached. He was not removed from office because he was not convicted by the Senate. What is impeachment? It is effectively an indictment, a formal leveling of charges by Congress. That in and of itself does not remove a president from office. The Senate could do that if they convicted a president on charges. This is a Republican-led Senate. I would say that the likelihood of this Senate convicting President Donald Trump are close to zero, if not zero.
And that was VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman. Acting U.S. Secretary of Defense Pat Shanahan is in the Asia-Pacific region this week, a trip that comes as tensions with Iran are on the rise. But VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb, who is traveling with the secretary, reports a different rivalry is Shanahan's top concern.
A growing threat in the Middle East. New missile testing from North Korea. But Acting Secretary of Defense Pat Shanahan says China remains his biggest concern.
Implementation of the National Defense Strategy is my top priority. China is the priority within the National Defense Strategy.
Shanahan's Asia-Pacific tour includes stops in Hawaii and Indonesia before the annual Shangri-La Defense Forum in Singapore, where he is expected to meet with the Chinese defense minister. The two countries are deeply entrenched in a trade war as their militaries vie for influence in the region. Bradley Bowman is with the Foundation for Defense of Democracies.
The term near peer competitor is used with China. I think that term is quickly becoming outdated. In many areas, China now has capabilities that are as good as ours or better.
And Michael O'Hanlon, a defense expert with the Brookings Institution, says that military power continues to grow.
A big part of what's happened is that China now has a big enough military budget of its own and good enough high technology, especially in areas of electronics and robotics and maybe certain kinds of missiles, that it can essentially be very competitive in the Western Pacific especially.
Shanahan's trip comes on the heels of recent decisions to reinforce U.S. defenses in the Middle East to protect American forces from potential attacks from Iran. O'Hanlon says the move signals that the U.S. is not just focused on China and Russia, but officials worry the decision to send troops there further entangles the U.S. in the Middle East, just months after some forces were withdrawn. Carla Babb, VOA News, Jakarta.
And here are some other major stories from around the globe. Afghan police say a suicide bomb blast near a military training academy in Kabul has killed at least six security personnel and injured 16 other people. Rescue workers scoured the Danube River in downtown Budapest Thursday for 21 people missing after a sightseeing boat carrying South Korean tourists sank. At least seven people were killed. A man arrested for a bombing outside a bakery in Lyon, France last week that injured 13 people has told investigators that he had pledged allegiance to the Islamic State group. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website or with our VOA mobile application. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
The sun's magnetic field changes over an 11-year period called a solar cycle, causing an ebb and flow of activity on the sun. At the beginning of a solar cycle, called the solar minimum, the sun is relatively quiet, with very few sunspots, solar flares, and coronal mass ejections. As the solar cycle progresses, the sun becomes more active until reaching its peak, called the solar maximum, about midway through the cycle. Following the solar maximum, the sun's activity calms again until reaching another solar minimum 5 to 6 years later, when it repeats the cycle again. Now, German scientists say they have found evidence that suggests tidal forces produced by the alignment of Venus, Earth, and Jupiter with the sun, which coincidentally also takes place about every 11 years, may be influencing the sun's magnetic fields and playing a role in regulating the solar cycle. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
We'll be right back. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Israel is in political turmoil after its parliament voted to dissolve itself a month after it was sworn in. Robert Berger reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Just 7 weeks after Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu won a convincing victory in national elections, he suffered a major political setback. The Knesset, Israel's parliament, voted for new elections in September after Netanyahu failed to form a coalition government amid infighting and high demands from smaller parties. Netanyahu, a right-wing conservative who has been in power for a decade, is furious. He said he did everything in his power to avoid what he described as an unnecessary election, especially since the public gave him a strong vote of confidence in the April polls. The developments are a shock because two elections in the same year are unprecedented, even in Israel's volatile political landscape. Yochanan Plesner is a former Knesset member who heads the Israel Democracy Institute.
Never did we encounter a situation whereby a government was not formed immediately after the elections, so our surprise is well-earned.
Netanyahu is facing possible indictments in three corruption scandals, and Plesner says that made him subject to political blackmail from coalition partners.
The degrees of freedom for maneuver were extremely limited because he couldn't lure any partners from the center, so that caused both the ultra-Orthodox and the other right-wing parties to raise the price, realizing that Netanyahu has no option.
The political turmoil comes as U.S. President Donald Trump is preparing to unveil a Mideast peace plan. The Palestinians have already rejected the plan for failing to meet their national aspirations. While in Israel, it will be many months before there is a stable government able to consider any concessions to the Palestinians. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
The UN Human Rights Office condemns the rise of anti-Semitic incidents in Europe and the United States and urges governments to redouble efforts to combat all forms of racism and intolerance. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the Rights Office in Geneva.
In the past week, a significant rise in anti-Semitic incidents in Germany prompted a government official to urge Jews not to wear skull caps in public. This so as not to draw attention to their heritage and religion. The German government then backtracked on this suggestion in the face of protests. In Austria, right-wing vandals painted Nazi swastikas on the images of Holocaust survivors displayed in a street exhibition in Vienna. The UN Human Rights Office denounces these acts and the noticeable upsurge of anti-Semitic incidents in a number of European countries and the U.S. The agency says it is particularly disturbed by the increase in physical attacks against Jews in a number of countries in recent years. Spokeswoman Marta Hurtado says there's been a particularly sharp rise in violent incidents in Germany and France.
However, the worst incidents have taken place in the United States, where 11 people were killed during an attack on the Tree of Life synagogue in Pittsburgh last October. And in April, a woman was killed in another attack on a synagogue in Southern California.
Hurtado tells VOA governments must condemn and denounce policies and acts against people based on their race, religion, or sexual and gender orientation.
We think that governments in general should do much more, be more vocal against hatred, against discrimination of any kind, of any person. Governments should be vocal, condemning and explaining to the whole population why words matter, because words lead to action and eventually to violence.
The UN Human Rights Office says freedom of expression must be respected, but there are limits. When abuse rises to the level of incitement to hatred and violence, it says that type of expression should be prohibited by law. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And you're listening to VOA's International Edition.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an examination of the presidential elections in Malawi and South Africa. Peter Mutharika and Cyril Ramaphosa both won. But do their victories reflect the will of the people? The power of incumbency on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Need a little Straight Talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events not always covered by other media. VOA.
This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller. As communities continue reeling from last month's cyclone in Mozambique, Islamist insurgents in the north have stepped up their attacks this month. In early May, gunmen stormed a Macomia district village, killing six people and setting fire to dozens of homes. That pattern has been repeated throughout the month. For further insight into these attacks and who is carrying them out, my colleague Kim Lewis spoke with Gregory Piriro, PhD and president of EC Associates.
Locally, the group is called Al-Shabaab, but that means the youth in Arabic. And that doesn't mean that it's directly affiliated with Al-Shabaab in Somalia. It's a complex story, but some individuals had gone to Somalia to study and got radicalized there, and they came back. And there are other individuals from other countries who were operating there, but they didn't resonate with the local population until they tapped into an area of the Cabo Delgado province that was a scene of quite dramatic human rights abuses by security forces and police, security forces of a British firm, Gemfield, that is mining this rubies. It's the world's largest ruby deposits there. So there have been allegations of torture and killings of local population who were engaged in mining the rubies themselves, small scale. So this group tapped into the youth in the area and armed them. And that was their first attacks in 2017, was with the youth who had experience in this region of human rights abuses.
So looking at these recent attacks that have been occurring, are they just stemming from these original attacks back in 2017?
You can say that, but they appear to be based on vengeance. There's a lot of tension in this region because of all the foreign investment that's going in and populations being resettled. For instance, there's an American firm, Anadarko, that's building this big liquefied natural gas plant. They had this well-intentioned resettlement program, but there have been a lot of reasons why it hasn't worked out very well. And youth who have been displaced under this program, some of them joined the group. And the best we can determine right now is a lot of this is revenge killings, grudges against local people who may not have given them land access, that sort of thing. So it's a very complicated scenario that's going on.
What is the government of Mozambique doing to try to curb this violence?
They've had operations there, but parts of the population feel that the security forces and the police of the government have committed all kinds of violations, human rights violations. There was, in early 2018, a bombardment of a coastal town that was considered a stronghold, and a lot of women and children were killed. That was a naval bombardment by the Mozambican government. So the people feel caught between the excesses of the government's forces and what the violent extremist group is doing. I think one of the things to bear in mind here is people have been displaced. If they can't get the kind of access to land or to fishing rights, because there is a lot of in coastal community and that, this is a very desperate situation. There's no way for them to make a living.
Just looking at the people in these local villages who've been reeling from last month's cyclone. So how are these recent attacks further impacting their lives?
Well, I think there's been some studies done on what has been going on in the instability, the insecurity has meant that a lot of farming activities haven't been taking place, and that there is down the line a threat of famine for these populations. There are groups working now to provide relief after the last typhoon that took place there in northern Mozambique and Tanzania. There are a lot more needs to be done. People are desperate.
And that was Gregory Pereiro, PhD, president of EC Associates. He was speaking with my colleague Kim Lewis. In his semi-autobiographical TV sitcom, Rami Youssef, satirizes the daily life of a first-generation millennial Arab-American Muslim. In an interview with VOA's Penelope Pulu, the comedian describes his show as funny, darkly satirical, and down-to-earth, aiming to dispel stereotypes about Muslims in America.
I don't know what I'm doing, man. I look at my parents and how strong they are and how they just know everything's going to be okay because they have God. And yeah, I have sex even though I'm not married.
Break it up!
So what? Is that, that means I'm not a good Muslim?
Comedian Rami Youssef says his goal of making the comedy show Rami was to make his Arab Muslim immigrant characters relevant to American viewers, regardless of culture, age, or religion.
I wanted to zone in on an Arab Muslim family and show the real problems that they have and show their humanity and kind of really highlight what does it look like to have a bit more of a modern spiritual story.
The show tackles practicing Islam in secular America, multi-generational immigrant family differences, gender issues, career and marriage.
It's just temporary.
In this clip, Rami is being interviewed by a prospective bride.
So, what are your goals for this life?
This life?
Yeah. Before the Day of Judgment.
Yeah, you know, I'm not really like a big planner. It's been kind of overwhelming, the amount of people who've said, oh man, this is so much like me, or this is so similar to what I went through.
This Ramadan, I really want to do it the right way, man. It's been a weird year.
I'm just like trying to be good.
Those sentiments are familiar to many of those coming to the Dar al-Hijra Islamic Center in Northern Virginia to pray and break their fast during the holy month of Ramadan.
Trying to mesh your faith understanding of helping one another, of being at your neighbor's aid, and just trying to live a spiritual life, it becomes somewhat difficult in a life that's motivated by social media and you know, just material and kind of the rat race of jobs and work and everything like that.
The mosque has separate sections for men and women to minimize socializing and distraction while praying. But Rami pokes fun at an underlying sexism where men, for the most part, have a bigger say and a larger space.
Yeah, I mean, dude, the women's section sounds terrible. Have you even been there?
No. It's the women's section. Nobody goes up there except women.
Jokes aside, for young Arab American Muslim women like Fatima, Islam is part of their identity.
It's just really difficult sometimes. Maybe, like, I have to dress modest, and people might look at me and tell me that, you know, it's kind of hot outside. But I don't really take that personally because I'm used to it.
Like Rami's on-screen character, Hossein Ghol sees generational differences among Arab Muslims.
I think the generational change is all over the world, especially with the technology right now. And I think the religion is something that people should choose. It is not something to be inherited.
For Rami, the comedian and the character, practicing Islam is a personal choice and an integral part of his American identity. Saif Rahman echoes that sentiment.
I'm actually kind of getting tired of having to apologize for being Muslim because there's no reason to. I'm an American, I'm a Muslim. And I think that's what I'm and many other American Muslims are getting tired of having to try to explain away.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News.
Before I go today, if we take a look back in time, it was on this day in 1431 that Joan of Arc, who is condemned as a heretic, was burned at the stake in Rouen, France. And in 1922, the Lincoln Memorial here in Washington, D.C. was dedicated in a ceremony attended by President Warren G. Harding, Chief Justice William Howard Taft, and Robert Todd Lincoln. And that's going to do it for us today. On behalf of our director, Patrice Martin, and engineer Rob McLean, thank you so much for joining us. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a tremendous Thursday.